It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this month, the CDC released new isolation guidelines for people who test positive for COVID-19, and now matches more closely public health advice for respiratory illnesses like the flu and RSV. A public health specialist joins us now to break down what led to that change and how it could impact the spread of the virus in the future. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What have you been doing to keep yourself and others healthy during the respiratory virus season? What do you think about the CDC's updated recommendations? Have you changed the way you recover after getting sick when it comes to how long you stay out of, say, work or keep a kid home from school or fill in the blank? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Ajay Sethi is a professor of population health sciences, faculty director of the Masters of Public Health program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Ajay, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Nice to be here.
Well, can you talk us through the latest guidelines from the CDC?
Yeah, so the latest guidelines are asking people to be more mindful of their symptoms in deciding when they should be in isolation versus leave their house and still take precautions to avoid spreading any germs to other people. The previous guidance, held sort of this requirement that everybody, regardless of symptoms, after testing positive for COVID, would, stay at home for a minimum of 5 days. But the reality is people experience COVID differently. So they've asked people now to think about their symptoms and stay at home as long as you're ill. And once when you start to get better, once when the fever is gone without any medications, wait another day, and then you can take yourself out of isolation.
Now, when it comes to public health guidelines, how much of this is, okay, this is what we know absolutely about stopping transmission of disease, versus this is what we know about how much people will actually listen to us and take our advice and try to find a happy medium there?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. And, there's also a chicken and egg moment here where people for a long time now have been deciding for themselves what sort of protective measures they'll take for themselves and how they'll protect people around them. We don't see masks nearly as much as we did 2-3 years ago. And that's true with isolation and testing as well. But at the same time, I think what we don't remind ourselves enough is that there's a lot of immunity out there. Estimates are that 98% of people have either been vaccinated, have had COVID, or both. And with that growing immunity comes an opportunity to rethink how we manage COVID at a community level.
These new guidelines kind of lump COVID-19 in with other respiratory illnesses like influenza, the flu, or RSV. They're different. They have different consequences and symptoms. What do you think of the logic behind kind of just wrapping them into one bundle of recommendation?
Yeah, it's more pragmatic. It also, I think, follows the way people think and kind of approach symptoms. Before COVID, you never really heard about people testing at home for a respiratory virus. We didn't have tests largely available for that purpose. When COVID emerged and a test became available and then widely distributed, it became the habit for many people, but not all. And today, I think most people don't even bother testing. Most people don't, but some people might still have those at home. So by thinking about this as any respiratory virus, the precautions are going to be the same. You don't want to spread it to others. So staying at home is a good idea, especially if you can, and wearing a mask around others, regardless of the pathogen, is a good idea to protect people around you.
One of the recommendations is for that person, they've had COVID or one of the other illnesses we're talking about, they're over it, they go back to work or what have you. One of the suggestions is try to make sure that the environment is better ventilated. So opening windows, if that's possible. I heard people early on with COVID saying, hey, maybe we as a society should tackle our indoor airspace and our ventilation and things like that. Have we done that with these diseases in mind, do you think?
It's improved. COVID reminded us that ventilation does matter, and there are engineers who are working with people who manage buildings to improve airflow. But that sort of infrastructure improvement takes more time than recommending new behaviors for people to follow. So it's happening, but it's not happening fast enough, if you will.
We're talking to Ajay Sethi with the public health program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about updated guidelines from the CDC on when you can go back amongst people after COVID or flu or RSV, new kind of looser guidelines, taking away that, hey, you should stay at home for 5 days concept. You could join in with your thoughts on that, your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. One question I have, Ajay, is, you know, some people will get COVID and they'll know it. They'll have some pretty serious symptoms and that'll lead them to get tested. Some people, especially if vaccinated or if they've had it before, might have it with lesser symptoms. How much are we seeing COVID being caught by people but never noticed, never tested for?
That's a property of the virus, which has, from the very beginning, made this very difficult to control. The ability for someone to be infected, to be infectious, and not even be aware of their illness. Maybe they'll get symptoms a few days later, even though they're infectious now, and maybe they'll never get symptoms. So that's a property of the virus that's still in effect. And now that we have more immunity, I think we probably see a lot more of that, where symptoms are so mild, and yet people are carrying the virus and potentially spreading it to others. It's very difficult to measure. You'd have to recruit people and test them almost every day to figure out how often that happens. It's hard to estimate. And again, if we think back about these guidelines and how they've become more pragmatic, the reality is from the very beginning, people have been spreading this virus without knowing it.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Kathleen is with us in Madison. Kathleen, hi.
Hello. I'm nearly 71 years old. I've been 100% homebound for 4 years now and counting because of COVID, because I have a chronic respiratory illness. It's not diagnosable. It's not treatable, but it is severe. And so here I am. I've had to give up a lot of aspects of my life that I used to enjoy and make the best of what I've got left, like pretty much 100% online, you know, that I can do sitting at home.
Kathleen, I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you, though, for sharing your story. And Ajay, Kathleen pointing toward one of the biggest concerns I've seen about these new guidelines is for people with something like a chronic respiratory condition or an immune system problem, something that renders them particularly vulnerable to COVID, even maybe with vaccinations. Some people saying these new guidelines will fall short of protecting us.
Well, what it is so one, I agree with you. I feel badly for people like Kathleen who have underlying conditions that put them at risk for having a severe bout of COVID if they were to get COVID. And when you look at the data of people who are hospitalized with COVID, they tend to be older and they tend to be people who are immunocompromised or have, you know, underlying conditions. That's in whom the disease is more concentrated, severe disease is more concentrated. And for them, you know, protecting them is very important. And so family members who are healthier certainly should be wearing a mask around those who are vulnerable for severe COVID. Definitely stay away altogether if they have COVID at the time. And that's something that's going to be, you know, from this point forward, really important for individuals. It's not even just COVID, but also RSV in older adults is not necessarily a great thing to get. And influenza, we've always known older adults are more vulnerable to severe influenza.
Kathleen, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And that reminds me also, Ajay, as I understand it, these new guidelines from the CDC, they're not here talking about a hospital or a senior care facility. The precautions there will be a little more rigorous, hopefully.
Yeah, that's right. So these guidelines, these updated guidelines apply to community settings, and healthcare settings have their own operating guidelines that are, you know, built on the foundations of infection control. And so those will be in place and those are separate.
We're talking to Ajay Sethi, professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the new simplified COVID isolation guidelines released by the CDC. They also apply to the flu and RSV. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been sick with a respiratory virus this year, COVID or otherwise? What kind of isolation or masking guidelines did you follow? Were you able to figure out, based on the information out there, what were you supposed to do in the first place? What questions do you have about the current state of COVID and these new CDC guidelines? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Ajay Sethi, professor of population health sciences at UW's School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about the recently updated COVID-19 recommendations from the CDC and how to keep yourself and others healthy. Those guidelines also apply to the flu and RSV, saying watch your symptoms, take precautions as you start to go back, but taking away the hard 5-day isolation suggestion. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a loved one especially vulnerable to complications from something like COVID-19? Have you taken extra steps to keep yourself and others safe? What are your thoughts, your questions about the CDC's guidelines on these illnesses? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Great show as always. Yeah, I go back to earlier time when we were just coming off those deadly childhood diseases like measles, and the vaccines were new, and things like polio. And so parents were extra cautious when kids got sick. Because we're talking about young kids and their ear infections and the like. So I was fortunate. Either my grandmother or, you know, my mom was able to take care of me at home. We did not go to school for maybe a week until we were really, really well again.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Ajay, I don't know if we have data on this, but have we changed in our attitudes toward when we can send kids to school when they're sick?
Well, you know, that those sort of things are very different from place to place. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you know, affording childcare is not an option for people. So kids often do get sent to school despite being sick, maybe with mild illness. Luckily, you know, with childhood immunizations, especially the ones that are required for attendance in school, rates are pretty good. Generally, we've had some sort of setbacks in the last couple of years, particularly with measles. But they're generally pretty good, and hopefully we'll head in a more positive direction moving forward.
Jim, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Ajay, let's talk some more about vaccines. I think we've been talking, you and I, for a couple of years now on, you know, will COVID, with the main strains of COVID, change too fast for vaccines to keep up? How much will we have to reformulate vaccines? What are you seeing now in that that arms race, vaccine versus the virus that causes COVID?
Yeah, so, well, we know now that boosters are recommended, and we've had an update to what booster is provided to people a couple of times now, and I think a couple of things are clear. Looks like boosters are going to be needed for the foreseeable future for this virus. The evolution is pretty rapid, quicker than we'd maybe expected when it first emerged 4 years ago. So boosters will be important. And you may have heard last week, the CDC was recommending an additional booster for anybody who's over 65 or vulnerable for severe disease. So maybe more frequent boosters for people who are in those categories, and one booster for everybody else. I'll say you may be aware that not enough people are getting boosted. I think if you've had COVID fairly recently or maybe at all, you might assume that you can forego the vaccine because you had COVID and got immunity that way. But the data show that people who are hospitalized are less likely to have been vaccinated. And so getting boosted is important. And overall, less than a quarter of all adults in the United States have gotten their latest booster. And even when you get to people who are 65 years and older, so the more vulnerable, not even half, about 42% have received their latest booster. So we can do a better job there.
I want to put numbers into context a little bit, Ajay. I saw at reading up today, last year, 75,000 fatalities attributed to COVID, which looks really good compared to, you know, 250,000 or hundreds of thousands in previous years. On the other hand, like a 75,000 fatalities from a flu season in a year, that'd be a pretty bad flu season. Where do you put those numbers? How do you put those numbers into context?
Yeah, I mean, it's still high. And because we have vaccines and we don't, you know, get enough uptake of vaccines, I think that number will be lower if we can promote vaccination better. At the same time, you know, 2 years ago, even last year, COVID was like almost a third leading cause of death in the United States. In 2023, it was the 10th leading cause of death, and maybe close to 11 right now. So that's, I mean, that's a lot of progress. It's still an unacceptably high number of deaths simply because there's a vaccine that's effective and available, and because not enough people have been vaccinated or fully boosted.
Let's go back to our callers. Mike is with us now in Slinger. Mike, hello.
Yes, speaking of boosters, I'm 75. I had a booster shot in November, and I would be eligible again in 3 months, I'm assuming. Are there going to be any summer boosters, or are we going to have to wait again until November, October, somewhere in there?
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. So Mike, in his 70s, Ajay, what are the current recommendations there?
Yeah, so just last week, an advisory committee advised the CDC, and they adopted that recommendation that Mike or anybody in that age group can get an additional booster and doesn't have to wait until the fall. I, too, got my booster in November. I'm not eligible for an additional booster. But I'll say it's been shown that those antibodies do wane maybe around 6 months after that booster. So if you're vulnerable for severe disease, it's a good idea to get another shot and talk to your doctor about that.
Mike, thanks again for the call. Ajay Sethi is with us from UW's School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest CDC guidelines on COVID precautions, along with RSV and the flu. Ajay, how bad a flu season has this been?
It's average. It could be a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Flu has been circulating. I think a lot of people who had symptoms, respiratory symptoms, and perhaps tested for COVID and tested negative may have learned that they had the flu or maybe just assumed it. RSV has been around, and rhinoviruses and other things. But flu has not been insignificant like it was in those early years of the COVID pandemic. It has returned, and it's not quite gone yet. So this is where thinking about respiratory symptoms as a whole is a good idea. If you're not protecting yourself against COVID, you can protect yourself against the other pathogens.
And let's talk about the other vaccines. The flu vaccine, they come out every year in the fall. What has uptake been on vaccines in the COVID era for the flu?
Yeah, this year not as great as we've seen in previous years. And we luckily are seeing the typical pattern that older individuals are more likely to get vaccinated against flu than younger individuals. And that's always been the case. So at least we see that pattern. But overall, the uptake is a little lower than it was pre-COVID. So we have improvement there. And what's nice about this year's flu vaccine is that it turned out to be a pretty good match with what was circulating. So it's a missed opportunity for people who don't get vaccinated.
And then there's the least familiar of the group we're talking about, I think, Ajay, the RSV, respiratory syntactic virus. I believe I have that right.
Syncytial.
Thank you. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about what that is and who is eligible to get and should get vaccinated for that.
Yeah. So adults 60 years and older are eligible to get an RSV vaccine. You know, adults are going to be more likely to have severe RSV infection if they caught that virus. And especially with older ages and, again, people with underlying conditions. So that vaccine has been recommended since the fall. And I don't know what those numbers are for uptake, but as with a lot of vaccines, the uptake can be a little slow. And I'm not sure if everybody is aware of that that vaccine. Kids, you know, have been getting RSV infection coming out of the COVID pandemic, those years of sort of more isolation. And so we've seen more RSV illness in recent years, and we'll hopefully see that go away a little bit more in the future.
And Ajay, for people out there, getting back to at-risk people, if someone out there listening is at a higher risk for these kind of respiratory illnesses or someone in their family is, what are some of the things that they can either do to take precautions or maybe should be in touch with their doctor about?
Yeah, so number one would be being up to date on all the vaccines that are available. They've been approved because they're effective. And the older you are, the more effective they are for you because your underlying risk for severe illness. Also, just the good old hand washing and practicing good hygiene and cleaning up the environment around you is always helpful. And also having conversations with family members and people, letting them know that if you know they have symptoms, they prefer not to be exposed to their illness. And you know, we before COVID, I think it was probably like people wore it with a badge of honor to show up to work with those respiratory illnesses, feeling like they were, you know, working hard. And I think the culture's changed a little bit. There's a lot more mindfulness and understanding that spreading illness to others is not kind. And so hopefully we can continue that trend and people can, you know, be willing to share with others. Say, hey, I'm vulnerable to severe illness. Could you please cover your cough or wear a mask or just not be around me?
Ajay, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Ajay Sethi, Professor of Population Health Sciences and Faculty Director of the Masters of Public Health Program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us today for a look at the recently updated COVID-19 recommendations from the CDC, what that change means for public health. Still time for you to share your story. If you've done something to change your level of precautions when it comes to these respiratory illnesses, COVID-19 and others, or if there's a question you'd like us to tackle in the future, either on a talk show or for our news team, we'd sure love to hear from you. You can email us ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Send in your questions. We can try to find some answers for you.